Are we ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain.
I can't hear you.
John's probably like, what is going on?
That's from SpongeBob.
Yeah, it is.
Who threw an eagle sword under the sea?
Hail Westfall.
Welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their supportive gamer husbands who've agreed to read with them. I'm Lauren.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Con.
And I'm John. Welcome to our first bonus chapter, bonus episode for bonus Throne of Bonus Glass, bonus, bonus, bonus.
Woo, woo, woo.
Woo. Let's get that bonus.
Sound like a used car salesman.
Bonus, bonus, bonus. Get, come in and get your bonus. We have bonuses, blue bonuses. We got red bonuses. Get all your bonuses.
You won't believe how many bonuses this baby can fit in her. Slap the trunk of the car.
What a bonus. Okay.
Keep it. Keep going. You heard.
All right. Rock it. Okay. You heard that correctly. There are bonus chapters for the Throne of Glass series by Sarah Janet Maas. Today, we'll be discussing the first four, which take place throughout the first four books. The last two take place later in the series, so we will be covering them in another bonus episode after finishing the tandem read.
Yes, and these chapters are all linked in our Discord, which you can join through our Patreon, linked in the show notes or the description box below. You can find them online via Google search, but what you can't find on Google is early access to these podcast episodes. Our incredible, lovely community of other book lovers, live events with the four of us, merch discounts, and all the other great perks that come with joining our Patreon.
And lastly, before we dive into these bonus chapters, please take a second to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening. The most meaningful part of hosting this show is reading all of your kind words about your listening and reading experience. On Apple Podcasts, Chris72893 titled his review, Fantastic. Fantastic Book Club Podcast. I found this podcast while doing my own TOG reread, and I'm so glad I did. I'm loving the dynamic between the four friends, and I love all their unique takes on the books. I really appreciate that they start each episode with a pronunciation guide, because that's what I really needed in these books, lol, and a synopsis. I also am impressed with Con and John keeping it spoiler-free, and they don't give anything away, as Lauren and Kyle give their thoughts and feedback. All four also have a great sense of humor and keep things fun and entertaining. It's just an overall great podcast. I have searched and listened to other podcasts, Throne of Glass specifically, and Between Pages and Friends is the one I keep coming back to regularly. I look forward to listening every single week. And though I'm on Kingdom of Ash, I will continue to listen and hear their thoughts on everything. Holy cow, that was
so nice.
The nicest review. Thank you so much, Chris. I'm like going to cry.
So nice. Seriously, thank you so much. Okay, let's dive into these bonus chapters. The four that we are covering today are called The Captain and the Prince, The Assassin and the Princess, The Assassin and the Captain, and then there's a deleted scene from Air of Fire, which takes place around chapter 45, which is why we're pausing here to read those chapters.
Let's kick it off with a small recap for the first story, The Captain and the Prince. So this bonus chapter takes place after the Assassin's Blade, before Throne of Glass. It reveals a conversation between Kale and Dorian about the king's upcoming competition and who they're going to sponsor as Dorian's champion. It was originally published as bonus content in the US paperback edition of Throne of Glass.
Yes, so it's obviously just a conversation about them trying to decide who are they going to pick as their champion. Dorian said, I don't even understand why he needs a so-called champion when he has you and your men. Plus, the gods know how many shady people work for him. And I was like, honestly, I don't understand it either. Like, why does he need a champion? I feel like we discussed this a little bit in Throne of Glass, that it just kind of felt like a weird competition just to kind of get her out of Endeavor.
Well, we know Kael's not going to go around killing people for him.
Yeah, but he has all those like shady people with their own.
It doesn't make sense because he could have just had people nominate their strongest contenders. And then he's like, all right, give them all a collar. Like knowing what we know now.
Oh,
why take
yeah.
one when you can have them all? Oh,
yeah, that's true.
True. Good point.
I was going to say, yeah. I'm wondering if this was just a way for him to test the powers, like with somebody like Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Without it looking suspicious.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or it was literally just like an entertainment thing to cover up what he was doing since he wasn't even at the castle the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
That is an amazing point. That's probably it. I think both of them could be valid, but I don't think he even has the collars at this point because he was like testing on the like creature she finds at the end of Crown of Midnight. I don't know. Maybe he does, or we just don't see it, but he's
the worst.
He is the worst.
The worst. I was freaking out because it talks about how the last time Dorian had a night out was a year ago, and it's the party from the Assassin's Blade. That was like such a fun little callback and kind of hilarious that Kael didn't even know who was there and almost lost his job because he took the crown prince to a party full of assassins.
I know. Well, and I know we talked about like, that's them, right? Like, it can't be anyone else. But now I love to be like, that was them for sure. Yeah. Confirmed. And it's just kind of fun to know it exactly.
Yeah, super fun. The other thing I was kind of freaking out about was it's saying that Dorian's kind of leaning toward the window or whatever, and he's trying to get some fresh air. But it says for a heartbeat, Dorian could have sworn he felt a cool northern wind on his face, faintly scented with pine and snow. And I was like, wait a minute. Is Rowan there?
I wrote the exact same note, especially because we joked so much about Rowan's scent being like a good candle and stuff. So it's like, I know pine and snow. I know it. That's Rowan.
I know who that is. Okay, I just had a quick note about Kael with his half smile edged with no little amount of disgust, talking about Selena before he met her, saying if she was even sane to begin with. And obviously, he doesn't know her at this point, but I'm just like, it just sucks that he thought of her this way before he even met her. But then to also think of her that way before they met and then fall in love with her and then be like, I can't believe she's like that.
Yeah, that is true. I didn't think of it like that.
That just made me mad. Anyway,
I thought it was really interesting that it talked about how they were trying to get information on Selena when they kind of decided she might be the person. But like any notes that they tried to send in were like not returned and they couldn't get any information on her if she was alive or not. And so that's why they decided to like physically go to get her. They had said like all of her documents had been sealed. Anyone who had been taking her to Endeavor were like reassigned to other places and like didn't work there anymore. Like no one had any information on her. And so it was like, why did the King of Otterland care so much to hide that stuff? Like I never really thought of it before.
Was it the king himself who hid those things though? I don't know how much of a direct hand he had in sentencing her to her time in Endeavor, but I just, now that I'm thinking about it, because we talked a little bit about it in the most recent episode, but she didn't have documents. She was found in a river. So like what documents would have been made for her being like a citizen or whatever
I just thought it was, her arrest documents, like the paperwork.
But I don't know if the king had a direct hand in that necessarily.
He literally looked her in the eyes and sentenced her to her time in Endeavor.
Oh, that's right.
And that whole thing happened or whatever.
But did he sign a paper? My other thought was that he might have hidden it because he knew who she was, because he looked at her in the eyes. He had seen her when she was a child. He had seen her whole family and what their eyes looked like. And he might have just hidden the fact that they had her there.
Well, I know you talked about it in the last episode where you thought that the king knew who she was and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not convinced, only because he let her out. Like, ultimately, he's the one who said it was okay to bring her back for the competition and let her live in the castle and stuff.
I think he's too smart to not know that, but
I kind of agree too, but I just don't see why he would let her out, only to now be like, I'm going to keep Adian and have it be a hole to lure her back in. But like, dude, you know who she is. I don't know.
Unless he's still trying to like find a way to get rid of her without it being obvious that he like intentionally killed her or something, because he thought that she wasn't going to survive the champion thing. Like Kane was trying to kill her that whole time, even after she had been crowned the champion. Like he still tried to go for her. Like Kane still tried to kill her and the king like nodded at him to do it.
Why not just kill her in the moment you recognized her? Why send her to Endeavor? Why not kill her in Endeavor? Why let her out?
Because it would be him doing it? I don't know. But then, yeah.
He's done 100 other things. He's literally like, cheers, I killed multiple thousands of people from Calicola and Endeavor, but I won't kill this one teenage girl who might be the queen.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not convinced. But that's really it. That's that whole conversation. They decide it's going to be Selena. They can't find her paperwork, so they decide they're going to go get her, and then they go get her. Somebody come get her. That's it.
Exactly. All right. The assassin and the princess.
All right. Story two is Assassin and the Princess. It's a short scene between Selena and Nehemia that takes place after Throne of Glass, before Crown of Midnight. They decide to spend a day together shopping outside of the castle, and they end up at Cavils?
Cavils? That's how I was saying it. I don't know.
Cavils? Not Henry Cavils, just Cavil. Where they have a more serious conversation about the burden of their responsibilities and how meaningful their friendship is. This chapter was written by Sarah for the Crown of Midnight blog tour, and it was uploaded in separate parts on several book blogs.
Interesting.
And we don't have pronunciation guides for these because there's no audiobook for the bonus chapter. So we are just kind of guessing at the pronunciation of the names.
Yes.
I know. I texted Connor and I was like, hey, do you have a pronunciation guide? I don't know how to say this. And she was like, I don't know, but we've been pronouncing it like that. And yeah. So we're just going to try our bestest. But as soon as they get to the clothing shop, it said the girl could have been from Fenharrow or Eelway with her tan skin, but it was the twin gold bracelets, manacles around her wrists that marked her as a slave. Gold chainless manacles that had been welded on and would never come off. So this is like, there are other people in the shop and this girl is like with them. But this is, I think, the first and only mention of slaves that we have seen since the assassin and the pirate lord from the Assassin's Blade. It's the first and only that we have seen like point blank mention from Rifthold. So I felt like that felt important. I mean, it's just like a little bonus chapter, but we just don't really see it very much. And I felt like it was such a big deal for the assassin and the pirate lord. And then it was just like, not there. So
yeah, I thought that was really interesting too. And I feel like I don't think we've clarified yet that John and I have read the series before, but we've never read these bonus chapters before. This is our first time reading any of these. So we're just getting initial reactions from all four of us for these bonus chapters. I was loving though these little friendship moments between Selena and Nehemia in this chapter. Selena going on a whole tangent about this beautiful dress and how it's actually art and math and economics, and then she trails off and snorts and she goes, well, map and story aside, it's also pretty as hell. Nehemia's like, I think you also just like to look better than everyone else, my friend. They're just like little banter and stuff was so cute. And then she's like, it's a bit daring, people would be scandalized. And the princess grinned, who better to wear it then? And Selena's like, who indeed? I'm just super cute.
I love it. And then like the whole time too, they're there and she kept referencing Nehemia as like, you know, she's so much of a princess and her posture, the way she talks to people. And even if she tried to hide who she was, they would know it because like the people recognized her immediately as the princess. And then Selena's like shopping and stuff while they're waiting for them to grab something from the back. And it said Nehemia was shoveling cookies down her throat. And I was like, as every princess should, just shovel those cookies right down your throat. It was just in such contrast to how she was described the whole time. Yeah. It just cracked me up.
I thought that was funny too. Oh, I did love this little connection where it's the red dress that she's talking about in this whole chapter, and then she ends red up buying dress. It. It's
high heels. Red dress. I'm so glad you knew what that was.
Yes, immediately. So she's talking about this red dress and she ends up buying it. But she's like, at the time, she's like, oh, I'm not sure like where I would even wear this. And then it said, oh, she should buy the dress if only to piss off Kale. What I loved is I went back through the books and was looking for this. And I found that this is the same red dress that Selena wears when she goes to meet Archer. And it does piss Kale off. The first thing he says when he sees her in it is, you're not wearing that. They have like a whole argument about it before she leaves. So I loved that little callback to the book. And then this was like so sweet. I'm like, Lee Cavill, who even are you? And why are you literally so nice when he gifts her the pair of gloves at the end? And he says, and a gift for a year spent without any gloves at all.
And like before that, she was debating, do they recognize me? Because I came here as Selena, like the assassin, or do they recognize me now? Did they know where I was? Like that whole thing. And it just kind of built
up
to
the scars on her hands. Yeah.
Because he mentioned maybe her dress could come in long sleeves, you know, like trying to like help her out in those ways to cover those things up. So yeah, whenever he officially says like, and a gift for a year spent without any gloves at all, and he gives her those gloves because it's like so cold outside or whatever. Yeah, it was just so precious that not only like did he know, but he wasn't like afraid and he like cared about her. And I don't know, I thought it was really sweet too.
Yeah. And then also incredibly sweet, this is the last note I had for this one, but Selena and Nehemia's conversation when they leave the shop, and Nehemia is saying, for what it's worth, I'd pick you over 1,000 ordinary and extraordinary friends. I think even if we just met on the street, even if I just saw you in passing, I'd know what you are. And Selena's like, an assassin? And she says, the sister of my heart. It's her soul friend.
Yeah. And this just like coming out of Era Fire, having just read it, this just like solidifies seeing Selena have to struggle so much through her relationship with Nehemia, because there are all these little moments that obviously just weren't written down because that's how the world works in books and stuff. But like getting like a little tidbit of like, this is what their normal day to day was like in between all these other crazy things that she actually wrote down for us to read. I don't know. It makes their relationship so much cuter. I loved it.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the assassin and the captain.
Next up, we got Assassin and the Captain. This bonus scene between Selena and Kale takes place after Throne of Glass and before Crown of Midnight. Selena is returning from her very first mission from the king and finds a worried Kale waiting for her outside the castle gates. This one was also written by Sarah for the Crown of Midnight tour and was released on 4 separate book blogs as exclusive content from Crown of Midnight.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about this other than like, I think I would have liked this chapter more if I read it when it actually took place. But now that we know Rowan Whitethorn, it just feels super cringy and awkward.
Yeah, I still am like struggling with like, I still love them and I like reading about them. But like, I would so pick Rowan over Kale for her right now anyways. But there was a moment when they're talking and Kale was trying to, you know, see, are you safe? Are you hurt? You know, how that kind of a thing. And she said she snorted. Killing men in their beds doesn't involve much risk. And that is what happened. But then I was like, there's a lot of parallels there to what happened to her parents and her parents' death.
Yeah.
And that also might be in some of her spiraling down depression, thinking she's a monster, all of those feelings that she has to like really, really work through later. And then I also thought this was like another one, just like at the beginning where I was saying, like, why does the king need a champion? This is another one of those, like, why does this make sense? And we just accepted it and moved on. But it said, you are the captain of the guard to the most powerful man in the world. Word knows what horrible things you've done to people. And it's like, honestly, I feel like there should be more horrible things that the captain of the guard to the most powerful man in the world should have done. But I mean, honestly, like, why is Kale there? I guess like my only guess would be to be like a fake, like a facade. But I wonder if there's like an actual captain of the guard of these behind the scenes guards with their like black outfits and stuff. I feel like everyone should be like, why is he the captain of the guard? But everyone respects him and takes it. I don't know.
He's even said that he's captain of the palace guard. He doesn't go to war or fight anything. And like, yeah, there might be stuff in the palace that he does, but he's not the executioner. He'd never killed anything before. It's like a pretty cushy position, but it could be a mix of the two. Like, yeah, it is kind of like a front where he's like, oh, it's the palace guard, you know, they're here to guard the palace.
Then there's the secret guard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have like the dungeons and stuff, so you'd think he's doing something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or at least getting reports from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it. That's the whole conversation. Yeah. Just Kale being overprotective and her being like, calm down. That's about it.
Classic. Yep. And finally, we have the Era of Fire deleted scene. This was originally published as bonus content and the Target edition of Empire of Storms. Don't worry, though, there's no spoiler content here for any future chapters or books. So just a quick recap here. Rowan asks Selena to help him entertain some guests who will be visiting Mistward. She agrees, only to find out that one of the guests, who is named Ramel, is Rowan's ex-lover. Kind of awkward. She arrives with two other Fae, Essar, who can wield fire a little bit and is a terrible spy, and Benson. Ramel walks in on Rowan and Selena sharing kind of an intimate looking moment. She further harasses Selena for being a half-breed. Selena makes an excuse to leave the room. And at dinner, Essar seems to realize who Selena really is, but Ramel continues shoving her foot in her mouth and provokes Selena to threaten her with wildfire, which is a very fun moment. The next morning, Rowan escorts the party to leave and talks to Essar in hopes that she would not tell Maeve, you know, what she saw at the dinner. Essar, seemingly knowing more of their relationship than she admits, tells Rowan that she would never take such a gift away from him, knowing who Aelin is, by doing something like telling Maeve. And that's kind of where it ends.
I was really sad this wasn't in the actual book.
Me too. It
has so many things that I was wanting, and in the actual book, it just is like, and there were some guests that visited, moving on. But instead, like, this is like that whole moment. And I really liked the insight on it. So if you haven't read this and you're listening, I strongly encourage to go read this chapter of all of the ones that we've talked about so far, because I thought it was really, really good. But to kick off, it's Rowan and Aelin, and they're just like talking to each other and just like getting to know each other, which I think is really cute. Rowan says his favorite color is green. And so I'm just pointing that out because Kyle's favorite color is green, if you can't tell, if you're watching on YouTube by his giant green wall behind him. But I thought that was cute because I love someone with a favorite color green, and so does Aelin. So we're like the same. But I talked about it in the last episode where I felt like her control of like the magic just like came out of nowhere, where she was able to like put the fire around things, but not set them on fire. But it starts here. In this moment where she's like talking to Rowan and she just starts like casually like playing with fire between her fingers. And she has this like really cute interaction with Rowan where he's like, test on me. And she makes him like a crown of fire on his head, yeah. Which I was like, that feels like some foreshadowing right there. But then in turn, he makes like a crown out of ice and puts it on her head, which I thought was just so cute. I did think like it's going to melt on her and mess up her hair. She would care about that. But it just turned into like steam and didn't mess up her hair. So everything's fine with her hair.
Thank goodness.
I know. But going into the Assassin's Blade, I feel like a lot of things are like, you know what's going to happen. But one of the big mysteries was, how do they pay for their freedom from Erebin? Because it doesn't happen until really like right at the end. And in this little bonus chapter, she says it was because she like sold an Asterian horse, and that's how she got the money, because like the nobles come in on Asterian horses and whatever. And so I was like, oh, well, that would have ruined that one tiny mystery you actually have in Assassin's Blade. Like, not like it's life and death, but it was something. So
I thought it was kind of crazy that Selena references the chocolate hazelnut cake from the other bonus chapter, the one between Selena and Kael, even though it was like super cringy. I think they said something about going inside to eat chocolate hazelnut cake or
go meet the king and then I'll have chocolate hazelnut cake at our lunch. And she's like, our lunch? And he's like, do you want to eat lunch with anyone else? And she's like, okay.
But then like when she says it here, she's like, that's a lie. I feel like I can't even stomach chocolate hazelnut cake right now because of the last time I ate it or something like that. So I thought that was interesting too.
Which, I mean, when you have an ex of any kind, there are things that you're like, I can't eat that, I can't go there, I can't do whatever, because it makes me think of them, and then you have awkward feelings, even if it was like forever ago. So I think at the end of Air of Fire, she's okay with that. So then we meet, is it Ramel? Is that how we were saying it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she is Rowan's like ex-lover, and she like holds her hands out there and like is waiting for him to kiss it, and he just like drops it and walks away, and I was cracking up. I thought that was so funny. But she's like really rude to everyone. First of all, they like kick out all of the demi-fae, and she's just like the worst. Selena was trying to like talk to Rowan about it, and like, so you and Ramel, and they're kind of like bantery, jokey, you know, back and forth. He just says like, don't you dare, he said, growled, leaning low enough that his breath warmed her mouth. But he was trying to like not get her laugh. So like, first of all, he's like growling at her, which I love it when fictional men do that. And then also he's like leaning over her, literally on a bed, trying to like intimidate her, but like totally like a flirty, jokey, bantery way. And then Ramel just like opens the door to their room. First of all, knock. Second of all, I feel like Rowan had to know she was there. He's ancient and a warrior and knows
his fae hearing and stuff.
Yeah, he'd be like in tune to like, someone's walking down the hallway, somebody's opening my door, but he didn't move. He just like stayed over top of her. And I thought that was really interesting, like making a statement there.
Yes, definitely a statement. I was also just laughing at like, there's like so much awkward tension between Selena and Ramel, but then Ramel's like, is this considered part of her training too? And I was just cracking up. I kept giggling when I was reading this chapter. And then I was sitting next to John when he was reading it, and he kept chuckling too. And that was funny. But then we get a real touch her and die moment from Rowan.
Yeah, we do. It. But Ramel just like kept saying things, and Rowan even said like, she's doing all of this not knowing what manner of predator she was provoking. And I thought it was really interesting that he calls Aelin a predator. Like, that felt like, I know, but I think it was like in a positive way. Like, he views that as a good thing. I think if this was like Kale's POV, that would be a super negative thing. But
very true.
I just thought that was an interesting description of Aelin.
Yeah. Okay. So this whole conversation between Selena and SR, where we find out that she is also a fire wielder, and she doesn't have like a lot of that gift, like a lot of that power, but I thought that was so cool. And the way that they were just talking with each other about what that power is like and learning to control it. And I'm also bummed that this wasn't in the book. There's so many reasons I feel like this would have been such a great addition to the book. I don't know why it was deleted.
And even Selena's like, oh, I've never met another fire wielder. And when she's feeling so alone in the world, for her to have someone else, like all of the things, I just thought from many levels, that was cool.
Yeah, even with her being like wary of SR as a character or whatever, I just thought that was such a cool like moment for her. And then I just wanted to call out when Rowan calls Selena bloodthirsty. This is the same word that Kael previously used to describe her like in disgust. But when Rowan says it, he says he finds it endearing. And then he tells her that she could level an entire city too if she wanted.
Like, I know.
Turned into this really sweet moment between the two of them, which was just so funny to me. But I like love that comparison and that they use the same word there.
Well, and she even asks, like he says, like bloodthirsty, and she's like, and I don't remember what she says, but
is that a bad thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a bad thing or is that okay? And he was like, I find it endearing. So like she felt self-conscious about that from the past. And so to have him like it, I don't know. I just love them. I love them so much. But they are at dinner and Ramel is just the literal worst, brings up the word whipping something. And of course, that's like Selena's trigger word for getting pissed off at something. She ends up putting all of Ramel in fire and like slowly heats it up and has this whole moment. And I'm like, this is what I needed to see her practicing it a little and now practicing it even more. And then she sets an entire city on fire, like especially with Rowan kind of giving her that idea, almost like you could do this to an entire city kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like it felt like it built up that moment to be like, oh, this is epic. She is doing it, instead of being like, what? How did she learn how to do this? Like, where did this come from? Like, I just wish it had like the build up to that moment. I think it would have been way cooler. Yeah. I just like too that she was like slowly heating her up. Like she had control even on the temperature, not just like on and off.
She got the crock pot going.
That's what kind of what honestly turned me off to having this chapter originally included, because it was
really
in the book as it is. She doesn't have that great of control until she accepts her past and knows that it is a light to drive out the darkness. And this to me felt like, okay, so she could already do it. Like there was no drastic gain. And like, yeah, you said like, oh, you know, maybe, you know, burning the city in reference to her being able to. But in the book as it is, I enjoyed her not having that level of power and control until she accepted it was part of her.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I see that side.
Yeah.
And I also feel like unless any of these characters ever show up again, which you don't have to say anything if they do, then they're not really needed in the story as a whole either. I could see why it would be like, well, we don't need this visit and that specific fire control thing. I was like, okay, I could see why she didn't include this if she didn't want her powers to jump that far yet.
Sure.
Well, and it also makes me wonder, like, why is this released? Like, the other ones were released as part of some sort of ad, something, like, trying to get people excited for the next book. But this is just, like, a deleted scene. And I'm sure there's other deleted scenes in books, but we don't always get them released as something to read. It made me think, like, maybe these people are important, and she did want us to maybe have some sort of backstory later or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So there were three special editions of Empire of Storms that included bonus content. So it was this chapter from Air of Fire, and then there were two bonus chapters, but those other bonus chapters took place like at that point in the story. So it is interesting that this was one from like two books back or whatever.
Maybe we'll have to revisit it after we read Empire Storms and see like, does it make a difference reading this bonus chapter now?
Yeah.
I really like this next part because we keep talking about, or I don't say we, I keep talking about all the italics in the book, but it was almost like she was trying to like express herself, but was afraid. And so she stopped saying it out loud. And instead she said it in italics, like in her mind. And it just said, it scared me that I've come to care so much about you that I draw that sort of line in the sand. It scared me that I would burn and maim and kill for you. And yet at the end of the day, you still belong to me. And there's still nothing I can do, no amount of burning or maiming or killing to keep you with me. But it was all in italics. But he responds by cupping her cheek and she like leans into it and stuff. It's so cute. And just says, I know. Also in italics. Just shows some of that leading into her trying to like get Rowan away from Maeve and stuff. That's just so much more precious. And I loved it.
I also love like the kind of added context we get about Lorcan here, because we don't know like anything about him yet, other than I guess in this chapter we learn that he and Rowan, they work together, but also seem like to kind of hate each other.
Strongest like, guys and stuff.
Yeah, have leveled a city together and whatever else. But it's also just interesting learning about like an ex-lover of Lorcan, and that she apparently had a big impact on him based on the way that Rowan views her, or that, you know, Rowan couldn't believe that Lorcan let her go or whatever he says. So that was like just some interesting insight that we get. I feel like we don't really get that from this book as a whole, but yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, but she's having this like conversation with SR, and he knows that. He's trying to like buy her silence, I guess, so she doesn't go back and tell Maeve what she saw. Not that she saw Aelin Galathinius, but that she saw Aelin defending and doing all of that stuff for Rowan and trying to like and seize the connection that they have. And she says, "I would not take that gift away from you, Rowan, because it is a gift. She is a gift to the world and to you." So I just loved that because I thought it was so precious, and that he's seeing that, but also that she thinks to the world, because she was saying not everyone serves Maeve because they want to. Maybe she'll end up being on Team Assassin one day, like being one of those people. But I don't know. I just thought that was really cute and interesting.
That's funny. My last note is that I was dead at Rowan, like straight up pranking Selena with the chocolate cake, where he doesn't just take a bite. He eats like several pieces.
I thought he ate the whole thing. Like she makes this cake.
Basically.
He left a sliver, is what it says.
Oh, yeah, for her or whatever. Well, it's because like earlier they like make like a deal. She says something. It's like, you owe me one. And I wrote in my notes like, oh, I'm so excited for this. Like maybe it will come up way later. And
calls in her favor.
Yeah. For like this deal or whatever in some future book. But instead it was just like, eat this cake I made that was all lumpy and gross. And then he ends up just throwing it all up because it was so gross. But while he's doing that, he hears her start trying to eat it and then like spit it out everywhere. But when I read it, I just thought he was doing it because he didn't want to like owe someone something. Like he didn't want to like be indebted to somebody in that way. But you saw it as a prank, and I like it as a prank better.
Yeah, I thought he was just messing with her.
Yeah, I thought he just ate the cake as like, oh yeah, you did me this, I'm doing you the favor of eating the cake like you want me to. But I honestly thought he threw it up just because his stomach could not handle the grossness or the sweetness, because that's not the diet he's used to at all. And he just goes outside not wanting to offend her to throw it all up.
I thought he was doing that so that she'd be excited to take a bite. And then she's like, ugh.
But he should have left more cake for her then. But yeah, it was good. But I'm just mad it's not in the book.
Yeah, so. Overall, I do really wish that this was included. I'm glad that we ended up reading these, because I think I knew at some point there were bonus chapters, but I wasn't super eager to read them. But I'm really glad that I read this one.
Yeah, the other ones, we've passed it. You know, it showed a little more insight here and there. But I feel like this might add a little bit more, or could have added more to the story if it was in there. All right. Well, that is a wrap on this fun little bonus chapter bonus episode. So join us for our weekly episode next week, where we will be starting Queen of Shadows, chapter 1-25. Cannot wait to continue reading this series.
And if you haven't already, please rate, review, subscribe, follow, tell your friends, call your mom. Visit our website for other merch and resources. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for community and perks. And we'll see you next time.
Whoop, whoop. We did
it. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bonus. Doing the robot.
Like she was shooting.
It's a finger gun.
Kale Westfall.
Gunslinger.